especially when you're up at Holden, there are so many different topics of things, areas, issues that you could buy, that you can get on a 1 hour tape that could be used for adult education sessions or an evening sessions or a series of evening sessions, that it should be no problem for any congregation to do family ministry to enrich the family of faith by just using Holden tapes and having discussions. So we'll roll the tape. And I'm Catherine Bosch. I'm a family life educator, just recently retired. And I've worked for many years doing family life education programs for a counseling agency in Waterloo, Ontario, Canada. And anger is one that I've done for the last 9 years. And I do it not because I think it's a hot topic out there, but because it's also a hot topic with me. And so I tell my classes, I'm a practitioner. I'm not just telling you what you ought to be doing about anger. I'm telling me what I ought to be doing about anger, too. So we're going to be looking at some of the basics. And of course, in an hour session, I usually do a 9 hour class, 3 sessions of 3 hours. And we're just getting going by the end of the 9 sessions, so or the 9th hour. So we're going to be doing quite a compacted session right now. And sometimes when I think about anger, I think about, here's dad with a t-shirt on saying the role model, and the kid, little boy walking alongside of him saying, chip off the old block. And I think that's where some of us have learned about anger. That's certainly where I learned about anger. I grew up on a farm in southwestern Minnesota, and whenever anybody got angry, we could go storming out into the fields and yell and scream. Nobody would hear us because there wasn't anybody around for quite a distance. And if you really got mad, you could go out into the woods and pick up branches and smack them against the tree and break them into all sorts of pieces. Feel pretty good about it, get lash out productively, because if it was your turn to pick the wood up to bring in for the wood stove, you had the breaking part of it already done. All you had to do is go and pick up the pieces. So it served a practical purpose as well as an outlet for getting out your anger. But there are some of us who just like to think about, that's the way I am, that's the way I'll always be. Well, here's Calvin and Hobbes. How many of you like Calvin and Hobbes? I'm so sorry that his writer has gone on holiday or taken a retired. Calvin is saying, nothing I do is my fault. Then look at what he's giving all the responsibility to. My family is dysfunctional and my parents won't empower me. Consequently, I'm not self-actualized. Do we even know what that means? He goes on and says, my behavior is addictive functioning in a disease process of toxic codependency. That's a mouthful, and he's only supposed to be about 7 years old. I need holistic healing and wellness before I'll accept any responsibility for my actions. Well, fortunately, there's his good friend Hobbes, who says, one of us needs to stick his head in a bucket of ice water. And Calvin says, I love the culture of victimhood. And sometimes that's part of our anger. What's our culture? What's the kind of victimhood that we feel deserves our anger and is justified? A lot of us began to feel that if we have this kind of circle, at the top of the circle is an event, something that happens and it triggers something. And most often we think it triggers immediately our feelings. Because you did this or said this to me, I'm angry. You make me so angry. You make me outraged, whatever. But that's not the way the direction goes. The direction instead goes, if we wipe that out, the direction instead goes to the side, and it goes through our thinking process, our beliefs, and maybe even back to that first cartoon, what we've learned from role models. Grandpa, grandma, mom, dad, teachers, neighbors, peers, older siblings, younger, if it works with younger siblings, why wouldn't it work for me? Things that worked. So we have these thoughts, these previous experiences, we have these beliefs. And whatever that trigger is, gets filtered through those thoughts and beliefs first. And then come our feelings. Feelings aren't produced immediately. Now, if you're stung by a bee, you're going to feel something immediately. That's a physical reaction. But when we're looking at emotions, there's something else that goes, it's filtered through, and that's our beliefs and our thoughts, our experiences. And then we feel something, and that feeling is going to produce some kind of action. We do something, and that may trigger something else, and we may proceed through that all over again. So when we look at anger, we're looking at something very different than what we may have originally thought. It's not you made me. It's I, because I believe I've experienced, I think something, my feelings come up from that. My feelings are come through whatever I've experienced or believed. So we're going to look a bit at anger, and we'll come back to this again. And we're going to look first. Now, for some of us, anger is a terrible, horrible, very bad, no good thing. Couldn't think about, I wouldn't ever get angry. When I first started to do anger workshops some 12 or so years ago, I had a large group and I put graffiti sheets on the wall and I put different topics over the top. And one of them was what I learned about anger at my parents' knees and other joints. And they would write down. Another one was, if I got angry, what blank would happen? And so, my feelings on anger. So there could be a variety of them. But what surprised me most was the kind of responses that came on that first sheet, what I learned about anger at my parents' knees and other joints. And there were a number of them that God won't love you. Mom, Dad won't love you. Grandma, Grandpa won't love you. You won't go to heaven if you get angry. God's going to zap you if you get angry. You'll go straight to hell if you get angry. And there were lots of statements like that. I never even thought of those. I mean, I had grown up with anger as being you get angry. That's just what everybody else in my family did. So I certainly read a lot of things about it. There's more to anger than, you know, some of these threats. And so I want to get just a bit of discussion first as we go through this, that to help us recognize that anger is not just up here in our thoughts. So when you have seen, sometimes it's hard to admit that we have anger. Sometimes it's so scary and we were just never allowed. For instance, I grew up in a family where anger was really, everything was let hang out. My husband grew up in a family where never was heard a discouraging word and the skies were not cloudy all day. So when he first experienced my anger, he was really quite shocked and in shock because that was not something that he'd ever experienced in his family growing up. So we've had to modify that. We've been married over 35 years, so obviously we've done some things that have worked and helping work through that. So whether you can feel the anger in yourself or whether you've experienced the anger from someone else, it doesn't matter which. We recognize that there are some things that happen. And whether the anger is within you or you see it in somebody else, what are some of those physical symptoms? What happens when you see somebody angry or you feel angry? What are some of those physical symptoms? Sometimes my teeth get all clenched. That's what I mean by physical symptoms. What actually happens physically, not just thoughts up in the head, but these things in your whole body.
Your face gets red.
Your face gets red. Okay, what else?
Breathing changes.
Breathing changes. Maybe faster. You may be holding it back and it's very slow. Could be either way. What else? What else happens when you see somebody angry?
Muscle tension.
And you may see it. You may see those fists clenched, teeth clenched, the whole body tightened, or maybe just inside all tightening, right in the stomach. Mm-hmm. What else?
A whole bunch of adrenaline.
Fast rushing adrenaline. There's just a kind of rush that propels you to respond quickly to something, whatever that something is.
You get ulcers from.
Okay, that's a kind of...
That's what my doctors tell me.
Yeah, that's a kind of indirect expression of anger, something that happens inside of you. You're right. What else? You may talk louder. You may close absolutely up. My mother used to do that one. She might not talk for several hours if she got angry.
How about crying?
You could cry, sure. You could scream. What else might you do that would... let's go down the next. What
you
might be...
vulgarity. Some
you may, sure, you may swear. Okay, that might be the direct expression. You start swearing. What else might you do that's a direct expression of anger?
Throw something.
Lash out at a person. Okay? Hit something. Smash things against something. Throw dishes. What might be an indirect expression?
Try to get even with them somehow.
Sure, get back at them.
Get back.
Revenge?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe withdrawal?
Withdrawal? Sure, that'd be an indirect expression. You might eat a lot. Stuff your face when you really get angry. You might drink a lot.
Sleep a lot.
You might sleep a lot to just avoid. Might be an indirect expression. Okay. What are some of
the... Or not sleep at all.
Or not sleep at all. You're just wired. Okay. So there's a lot of things that actually happen within your body, those actual physical symptoms, and there's a lot of ways in which we act out those physical symptoms. What about feelings? What are some of the feelings?
Threatened.
You may feel very threatened. Okay.
In my case, anger isn't really the feeling I'm feeling when I get really angry. It's something, a threat to either something I have or something I think I ought to have.
Okay.
Anger is a mask to deal with that because I don't want to deal with the underlying, whatever's going on underlying.
Sure.
And it works very effectively. The only problem is that it's both personally and socially destructive, so it's not the greatest thing. For me, I've had to learn, and very long and painfully, to deal with what it is I'm feeling and not use the anger as a mask as a reaction to what it is I'm feeling. Just be able to tell you what you have done has hurt me, or what you have done makes me fearful, or to recognize that I can be fearful.
Yeah. And that maybe even that feeling is okay.
Yeah.
One of the ways we might look at it as we deal with feelings, how many of you have ever seen an iceberg? I haven't. So this is my modernistic, my imaginary drawing. But you've got an iceberg, and as I understand it, about 1/9 of the icebergs is above water. And we might look at that in similar to anger. What we may recognize at first is that anger, but some of us that line may go way up here, and we're afraid to even recognize it as anger. Oh no, I'm not angry. I'm not angry. I'm not angry. So the anger may be above, or it may be completely submerged. And what we need to remember is that anger is a second response, and you said that very well, to a more primary feeling. Something's underneath here. Anger can also be described as a huge umbrella. It covers over lots and sort of protects lots of other feelings. Albert Ellis in a book, E-L-L-I-S is the way his name is spelled, in a book called Anger, How to Live With It and Live Without It, talks about anger as a lead marble. That every time you get angry, it's like swallowing a lead marble. And it just sits, doesn't pass on through, it just sits there, and you get angry again, and another one gets in there, and you get angry again, and another. So pretty soon you're just all weighed down with this huge weight of anger in your gut. That we haven't found ways to deal with or to dissolve. So if we look at this and think in terms of the iceberg theory of anger, that we've got, we may recognize that I'm annoyed, I'm outraged. Some time ago I came across a vocabulary of feelings. Where'd she go? I've had this 20, 30 years, I have no idea who put it together. But there's a vocabulary of feelings, and there's of all the feelings, there's only two that are positive, happy and caring. The rest of them, 2, 4, 6, 8, are all negative, such as depressed, inadequate, fearful, confused, hurt, angry, lonely, shame, guilt. But I think all of these negative ones fall underneath anger. Anger isn't just one category alone, but all the other ones are hidden underneath anger. When I get, when I feel angry, nobody makes me angry. That's a choice that I make. And I may decide not to get in touch with my feeling of being hurt or left out or overlooked or disrespected. And I just get angry. But if I can get down and if I can recognize that I'm feeling hurt or I'm feeling left out, then I can work. Then I know what I need to work on. Then I've got something specific. It's not just this whole cloud hanging over me, like Joe Spiftick or whatever it is. What was that cartoon where this guy would always have this black cloud hanging over his head? So let me just take a minute and have you think of the last time you were angry or someone else was angry. What was that feeling underneath? Don't tell us what the whole situation was about. Just come out, you know, what feeling do you recognize? Scared, frightened. Anyone know?
Disgusted.
Disgusted, okay. What else?
When I get angry, I'm not scared. I think I can lick the whole world.
Okay, so you feel strong.
I hit my husband in the shoulder, I punch him.
You feel that you feel you've got power. So sometimes it may, and for some, it may be a feeling that we're powerless. Okay, anyone else? What was the feeling? Get in touch. What was the feeling underneath?
Disappointment.
Disappointment.
A feeling of confinement.
Okay. Confined? Confinement?
Shame.
Shame.
Frustration?
Yes?
Tired.
A child?
Tired.
Tired, okay. It can be exhausting. It takes a lot of your energy out of you.
Sometimes failure.
Sure. You feel like you failed in some way? Guilty? Do you know the difference between these two? Guilty is when you've recognized that you've done something wrong. Your actions have not been always helpful. Shame is when you feel that you are wrong. You are bad. So there's a feeling of, you know, that all completeness, nothing's good about me. Whereas guilty may be, I shouldn't have done that thing. I've probably done some things that are okay, but I really shouldn't have done that thing. Shame is a feeling that nothing I ever do is okay. I've also heard guilty being described as the gift that keeps on giving. You feel guilty, and then you feel guilty, and then you feel guilty about guilty about. Okay, so there's a lot of feelings underneath here. And what's important to remember is about these feelings is that anger is a second response to a more primary feeling. Anger is also called the mask of depression. We're depressed about something and we make it, depression is often called the mask of anger. We're afraid of being angry and we end up becoming depressed. Nothing ever works out. Nothing ever I try. This will never work. And it's just a very negative kind of feeling. When we may need to have to look at what are we really angry about. And that anger does have a lot of, we talked a bit about some physical symptoms, but anger may also be there in some symptoms such as arthritis, stomach upset, headaches, a lot of physical symptoms that upset stomachs, nausea, and so forth, We have a friend who, a medical doctor, who was trying to figure out some of his own problems and came up with several studies where they related colon cancer to unresolved anger. He ended up dying of colon cancer, actually. But he also recognized that he was a very angry person. We often, when we talk about anger, put the responsibility for anger onto somebody else. You make me so angry. It's your fault. If only you wouldn't, if you should have, we would have. You know, he, she, it make me angry. Rather than I feel angry. I feel left out. I feel hurt, discouraged, powerless, powerful, tired, guilty, a failure, confined, frustrated. You know, any of these plus lots of other topics. So we need to take ownership and to also recognize it's important to own your own feelings. They're yours. And all feelings are okay. Feelings aren't right or wrong. Feelings are okay. Now, I think that's probably one of the best kept secrets out there, that all feelings are okay. They're yours and they're okay. What becomes judged are actions, not the feelings. Because I can be very angry, outraged at some injustice, and I may work to right the justice or to take some food over to somebody who's hungry or to invite them in to have a bed because they don't have any place to sleep or that they've been wrongly thrown out or turned out or whatever. If I choose to go over with a shotgun or with a big long stick or a knife or something and take after the person who's been in treating my friend or whoever unjustly, I could be picked up for assault. So I have some choices as to how I act on my feelings. I can call somebody. I can call the police. I can dial 911. I can offer them a place to stay. I can do a whole variety of things. I have some choices. Some of the choices may not be possible. Some, not all positive choices may be possible, but not all negative choices have to be acted on. So we need to remember that it's our actions that are judged, not feelings. Because I know a lot of people are going to be saying, but you're feeling so-and-so, therefore you shouldn't be feeling that way. And how many times have you ever had sadness or a sense of hopelessness or fear or whatever, and somebody comes up to you and says, oh, you shouldn't feel that way. Anyone else feel that with me? And what do you, when somebody says that to you, how do you feel? How does that help you feel?
Worse.
Yeah, it's, because do your feelings go away just because somebody says you shouldn't feel that way?
Never.
They probably become more intensified because that's what I'm feeling. How can you tell me not to feel that way? That's what's inside of me. What may be more helpful is to have somebody recognize, boy, you're really feeling upset about that, or that really tears you down, or that seems very unjust to you, or that's very hurtful to you. And then you can at least say, yeah, somebody understands me with that. So if we can recognize that we have some choices on acting on our feelings, we can also give out a choice of giving out an I message of maybe what I even need. When I see you yelling at the toddler in that form and threatening and shaking him, I get very frightened and scared that something's going to happen. I need to have you take a time out and or call me or call for some help to deal with what's going on until we can figure out what's going to be a way to solve the problem. And if I'm not the person that's involved in it, I may come in and I may give a listening message and say, wow, that's more than you can take right now. Shall we go for a walk? What are some of these what are some of these alternatives? We can get into that in just a minute. But we've got choices, and these are the important things to remember, that I can own my own feelings. I don't have to put them on anyone else because they're mine. They're okay. Feelings aren't right or wrong, they're okay. They just are. They're not a judgeable thing. They just are. It's how we act that becomes judged as helpful or not helpful. In fact, I try to clear my vocabulary from saying right or wrong to to say instead, is it helpful or is it not helpful? And that we have choices on how we act on our feelings. Okay, let's go into a little bit more. How might some other people describe anger? Well, if you go into Webster's dictionary, wrong one. Got the paper instead of the transparency. Okay, there we go. What is anger? Let me go back to this other one. Passive forms of anger. We might look at sarcasm, ridicule, embarrassment, procrastination, saying yes to doing something and then not never intending to carry through on it. You know people like that? Sure, I'll be there on time. Yeah, I'll be fine. Well, we won't be late. And then they never show up. Or they show up an hour late, later than usual.
To get even.
To get even. Okay, so what is anger? What in all of us is a secondary response from a primary feeling? Webster defines it as a feeling of displeasure resulting from injury, mistreatment, opposition. Usually it shows itself in a desire to fight back at the supposed cause of this feeling. We're back to the cartoon on Calvin and Hobbes again. I love the culture of victim, but it's not my fault. Somebody else, the devil made me do it. Okay, so that's Webster's dictionary. Weisinger has written a book called The Anger Workout Book. And he refers to anger as an emotion. Sure, there's feelings underneath there. Remember, feelings aren't right or wrong, it's an emotion. It's a communicator or a cue to something that's going, something's going on that all is not right. It's trying to communicate something. There's a clue there that we have to figure out. What's that feeling underneath it? What am I really feeling underneath that anger? It's a demand that if you were only more like me, then I wouldn't have to get mad at you. I want you to change something. It's a demand for change, but I want you to do the changing. It's also an expectation that you see me as okay and that you work to meet my needs. Back again to the demand for change to meet, for you to change. Weisinger also says it's a do-it-yourself process, it's a choice. Aren't there some times with some people that they can do something to you and you say, well, that's only John or that's only Mary. Somebody else does it, your partner, your child or something, and you blow up. Well, I'm just not going to bother with that other person, but I've got to set this one straight. They've got to change. I've got an expectation for them. It's also a learned reaction to frustration. It's a habit. It's become a habit. We rely on it. It's like a pushing a button. One thing about something that's learned is that it can be unlearned and relearned. Change. We can put something more positive in its place. And so it becomes a tool for change when it challenges us to become more of an expert on the self and less of an expert on the others. What do I need to do? How can I look at it? We may go back to that very early part and think of what was that trigger? What was that event or trigger? What is my belief that you should always agree with me? And if you don't agree with me, then you're a terrible, horrible, very bad, no good person? So what's our thought and what's our belief? What do we think that then leads to a feeling and then leads to an action? So how do I have some choices to make as I work through my anger? There are some other things that we might want to think about anger. And we might look at this old cartoon of the born loser. Here's this pompous boss who's saying to the loser, join me for a bit of one-on-one basketball in my club. And the loser says, you're on. And the pompous boss says, well, see you at noon. And no, don't forget, we're rubber sole sneakers only. It's the rule. And we look at that and you think, what in the world has that got to do with anger? Well, here's the born loser who's coming to play basketball. You know, sometimes we, and he's saying, weird rule. And what do we really hear? And do we check it out? Did the person really say, boy, you're a stubborn idiot? Or you didn't hear it yet? Could be something very similar. My husband is becoming hard of hearing, and he does most of the time wear hearing aids. Not all the time. He says they aren't comfortable. Well, glasses aren't. I've just got a new prescription for glasses, and I'm wearing my old ones because the new ones aren't comfortable. With the hearing problem, it's become helpful to check out. Is this what you said? And sometimes we get hysterical and laughing at what he thought I said and what I actually said. And I just have to say, I'm certainly glad you checked that one out, because it was way off the wall and something completely different issue. Well, what do we really hear sometimes? And how does that contribute to whatever that feeling is that may come up with anger? Do we hear what's really communicated? Or do we have some weird rules without checking them out? So that's, what are some of those weird things going on? What's back? What have we learned from early role models, from people who we've worked with or have been influences on us, that may have worked at that time, but they don't work in this situation over here? So we've got to check out some of our weird rules. And what are they really saying to us? Well, what can we do when we do have an issue of anger? And how might we deal? When do you begin to feel anger? When you begin to feel those actual physical expressions, the clenched teeth, the hot face, the clenched muscles, the tendency to yell a little bit louder. When do we begin to feel those, and can we cut them off at the pass? One workshop that I did, there was a young fellow who was probably in his mid-20s, I wasn't sure if he was referred there for anger management because of some attempts at assault or what, but he was there under somebody else's suggestion. And he wasn't so sure he wanted to be there. And he would keep finding challenges to what I was saying. And he would say, but, I don't have any of these beginning feelings. It's all of a sudden, pow, there's my anger. And all I can do is lash out at someone, throw something, yell words as well as fists. And so one of the first exercises that we have is to have them keep a record for the next week on a sheet that's handed out of when did I feel angry? What was the feeling underneath it? And if we were to do an anger expression on it from 1 low to 10 high, what rage level was it? At what point was it? Is it a very mild just annoyance, or was it outrage at number 10? What happened before this particular trigger event? What experiences, or what did you tell yourself? What beliefs did it filter through? And what were the feelings that came under it? And what did you choose to do? How did you act on it? Was there alcohol involved several hours before or several hours after? So having them check through, what were the beginning ideas that your emotions are beginning to rise? He said, well, I'll never be able to do that because it's just there. It just comes out of nowhere. The devil made me do it. The next week he came back and he had this sort of Cheshire grin on his face as if I've discovered something. And as we began, he said, can I share my experience of this last week? And I said, fine. And he said, you probably won't like my language, but that's the best way I can express it. And you may not like the language I'm sharing from quoting him. He said, I finally discovered it's when those assholes up here hear what's happening and start whispering and say, now you ought to do it, now you got it back, and you shouldn't take this, and they're putting it up. And he could go through all those feelings that were underneath. And that he was beginning to get in touch with them. But he had to use it in his language to figure out what was really happening And he then began to make a list of choices that he had for how else he could deal with these things that were being yelled at him, pounded into his head. So I hope that he's not gotten any more assault charges on him. I haven't seen him since our session ended. But I would hope that his awareness of what was really happening underneath was helpful. So we first need to figure out, when is there some annoyance or irritation? And then can we use that the I message to say, hey, wait a minute, I'm beginning to feel, own that feeling, I'm beginning to feel annoyed, or I'm beginning to feel outraged, or I'm beginning to feel what might be some of the more strong feelings on anger. I'm beginning to feel hostile, resentful, irritated, agitated, aggravated, antagonized, exasperated, belligerent, infuriated, outraged, seething. Well, where can we begin to get in touch and then find a way to take a time out? Hey, wait a minute, this is more than I can handle right now. I need some time out. 5 minutes. Some people recommend a minimum of 30 minutes. You're going to have to figure out what you can manage, what's going to be workable for you. And what do you do during that time? What might be some things that you could do in 5 minutes' time? You know, you probably heard a long time ago, one of the early things you probably heard about dealing with anger is that you should count to what?
10.
But unfortunately, how do we count to 10? 1 to 10. We're there right away. If we took a slow time to count to 10, maybe 1 up to 60 seconds, 2 up to, and give us 10 minutes at least, what might be some of the things that you could do during that 5 or 10 minutes of time that would allow you to come down to where your thinking level is again? Ellis also says that when we become angry, we are temporarily crazy, insane. That it shuts off our thinking, turns it off, because our adrenaline and our emotions are so filled, we don't have any room left, any energy left, any oxygen left to really think. So until you can begin to modify those emotions, remember, emotions are okay, not right or wrong, but we have choices. So if we choose to take a few minutes to, what can you do during that time to cool?
Meditate,
pray, what else?
Take a walk around the block.
Deeply to relax your muscles.
Try to do some breathing or some deep muscle relaxation exercises. What else?
Listen to some soft music.
I'm glad you stated it that way. I don't think rock and roll or heavy metal is going to help. Rock and roll might be okay. Heavy metal might not be okay.
I'll list myself under, but I bake bread.
Sure. Well, what happens when
you pound it and pound it, and the more you pound, the angrier you are, the more you pound, the better bread you make, and everybody loves you.
Sure. See? It's a helpful way to end up with that's like my breaking sticks out against the trees, and then I got wood to carry in. What else?
Sit there and think of what I should have said.
Yeah, you may walk, you know, a good excuse to use is to say, I've got to go to the bathroom. Nobody's going to argue with that unless you only have one bathroom in the house and there's 10 people that have to use it. Then they may get angry. But you might just say, go to the bathroom, wash your face, sit down and read a magazine. Think about, what else could I say? What else that's not going to include sarcasm, ridicule, or embarrassment? How else can I resolve this? We've got a problem. If you're angry, there's something that's not working out right, and you might need to say, I have a problem. I've got to go think about this, and I've got to take time to cool off and get back. You know, let's come back in 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever time you can both agree on. One of the things I would suggest is that you don't get up and stop up and slam the door closed without saying anything. Because if you do that, your children are going to learn to do that. And when they do that to you, you're going to be even angrier. And you say, you get back in here right this instant, and don't you dare slam that door. And they're just doing what you did. So it's a lot better if you can get out at least a couple of words. I am so angry at this, I can't deal with it. I need some time out. I'll see you later. And go. At least if you can give them that much information that you are trying to manage, they will try to manage. Make yourself a cup of tea, get a glass of water, probably not a beer or anything stronger, because then you're going to feel more justified in your own anger, and it'll close off your thinking. I suggest you not go out for a drive in the car, because you may be so angry, you might not. We had a friend who did this and who shared this word. He said, never take a drive when you're angry. He said, I totaled a car doing this. Mm-hmm. He walked out on his spouse, and he got in the car, and he went driving out into the country, didn't see a stop sign, went through it just as a truck was coming by. The truck driver said he doesn't see how anyone could have come out of that alive. The car was so mangled. And the driver, the angry one himself, was so shocked that he managed to get up and stagger away without major injury. Mm-hmm. But he said, I will never get into the car again when I'm angry. I'll take a walk around the block. I'll even try not to cross the street because I may not be looking. I may be so enwrapped in my thoughts that I won't be looking. I walk around the house. Do some exercises. Try to get as much oxygen in so your thinking begins to operate again. That the thinking portion of your brain gets turned on from being turned off.
Sometimes it takes a night's sleep.
It may. It depends upon the issue, how big it is. It depends upon how often it's happened and how you're feeling at this time. So your time limits, your time out may be very different for different things. May be different for the same thing with different people. But you need to figure out what you need and then share that need with the other person. I need to think about this overnight. I'll talk to you tomorrow. I still love you. I don't like what you did. There's this great little cartoon. Who's the cartoon? Dad's driving up into the driveway and just ready to get out of the car, and his kid comes up with a sign that says, love the sinner, hate the sin. And the dad says, uh-oh. Well, what's happened now? But those are good, smart little kid. I mean, those are good words of wisdom. Love the sinner. Don't have to like what he did, but you still love him unconditionally. That's God's love for us. That ought to be our love. Unconditional. Now, if you'd only do what I want you to do, then I could love you. We love because God first loved us. We may not like what they've done. That's an entirely different thing. That's the actions are judgeable. Not the person. God's the only one who judges those. So we take a time out. You may write a letter. You may never send it. You may rewrite it 500 times. You may find that it's very therapeutic to take that piece of paper and tear it into all the tiniest little bits that you can possibly tear. And throw them away. Put them in an envelope and send them to whoever it was.
The other person angry, and how would it be?
Putting it back together again would be quite a switch.
That may not be the best. Erase that one. Scrape it off.
That's a good one.
You may decide to write. You may decide that it's a lot easier to deal with a person writing that you can. This last year we lived in Dubuque, Iowa, and I worked as a mental health counselor for the Western Dubuque School System, which is a large centralized rural school. And I had a student who, a girl who was a good student in school, very active in school, not on drugs, not on alcohol, not into sex. She got mad at her dad about something, and she was the apple of her dad's eye, and dad was very important to her. Something was going on with dad, and he didn't have time for a couple of things that she wanted, and then said something very sharp and snappy, and it just hit her the wrong way, and she left, went to a girlfriend's house. I happened to be in school the next day when somebody handed her a note, And she read it, and she broke down crying, and we began to talk about it. And it was the mother had come to the school and wrote this little note saying, "We still love you. We're worried about you. We don't know where you are. Nobody's telling us where you are. We just want to know you're safe." So she went into the guidance counselor's office and did call and left a message on the answer phone at home, because both her parents worked, and said, "I'm safe. I'm at so-and-so's house. I can't come yet." And so we talked about it, and she talked about being hurt, that she was hurt by. And so I said, "What would you really like to say to your father?" And I handed her a piece of paper and a pencil, and she wrote away, filled all the lines on two sides of a piece of paper. And about every other sentence that she said was, "I still love you, and I need your love." She was not yelling, ranting, and raving at him. She was, in a sense, pleading that she needed his love. However, she needed to know that he still loved her. So she said no, she could not give it to her dad, she wasn't going to go home. She didn't feel she could go home yet. She was still trying to figure some things out. But she had a good friend who lived in the next farm and who could drop the note off, which he did to her dad. And then they had a phone conversation that sort of fixed a few things, and then she went home. But she found that it was much easier to say to her dad, and I thought the letter was a beautiful letter. It expressed what her needs were, expressed what her feelings were, expressed she did not use sarcasm, ridicule, or embarrassment. She didn't threaten, she didn't yell, she didn't put the blame on her dad. She just said, "I need, and when I heard, I felt." She took responsibility, and that was outstanding, I think, for a 16-year-old. And we could probably learn a lot from that 16-year-old. When we're feeling something that's not working and that we're going to end up being outraged and furious, stop and think about it right away. Write it down. Write down, what are some of your feelings? What could I do about it? What do I need? What is it? What's really my expectation? What's my demand? And how can I ask for that in a way that the other person can hear? And maybe listen to it. If you feel that it's too big an issue, that the other person is never going to listen, and there are some of those, maybe you need a third person, a neutral person, pastor, counselor, an impartial friend or relative, somebody who's not going to say, "Well, yeah, you are right, and you're wrong." That's not helpful. That's just going to add fuel to the fire. But somebody who can just say, "Now, did you really hear what the other person said? Repeat it back in your words." And if that's not what you wanted the other person to hear, then maybe you have to clarify it a little bit more. Now, is that what you wanted her to hear or him to hear? So that you can be that in-between person. What would need to have happen? What would need to happen in order for, you know, whatever to be fixed? What are your real feelings? What's underneath that anger? So it can help pull that out without taking sides. You're wrong and you're right. Remember I said I try to stay away from those labels. What's helpful and what's not so helpful? What would be more helpful? If you did this, what would happen? Would that be helpful or not? If you did this, what would happen? Would that be helpful or not? So we can check out what our feelings are and what our choice of actions might be. And is it the action that we want? Is that going to produce what we want it to produce or not? How do we find a way when we realize that maybe we were not quite so helpful? Maybe we were more sarcastic, ridiculing, and embarrassing to the other person, threatening the other person, or not listening. How strong do we feel that we could say, "I'm really sorry," to apologize? And I think that's particularly important for those of us in mentor positions or in adult parent role positions. So that those who are mentoring or those who are parenting can learn from us that it's okay to apologize. It's okay to admit that maybe you've made a mistake, and that they can learn that there's unconditional love. We may love the sinner, but hate the sin. That I'm still loved, I'm still okay, I'm still a child of God, I'm still your child. So we have to recognize, what does it really take in order to admit a mistake or admit that I overacted? I still don't like what was happening, but I may have overreacted on it. And let's try to figure out a way to solve this. Another way to look might be to figure out, when can we talk about this and find a way to solve the problem when there's no problem happening? Sometimes we only wait until we're in the midst of this emotion, a great wave of emotion and outrage, and then we can't really talk very well about it. And sometimes when we're all calm, we might be able to say, you know, this often happens on the, you know, right before payday when we're trying to figure out we're going to get all these bills paid and so forth and so forth, and we'll, you know, whatever. You know, what could we do so we don't get into that the next time? Can you plan ahead? If you know that there's always an issue that's going to be a sensitive issue, can you plan ahead for how you can deal with it? Somebody always picking you up late. Somebody who comes late for a meal on certain days. Instead of waiting for them to come late again, and I know, and you know, how can you talk about it beforehand and come to some solution? Or put some logical consequences on it. If you're late and we're finished with the meal, you'll just have to pick up your own meal and clean up your own dishes. That's the logical, natural consequences. If you give me a call ahead of time to tell me how late you're going to be, I'll save your meal. If I don't hear, I'll assume that you're not coming home, and I'll just clear up the table and put the food away. There may still be leftovers in the refrigerator. You can always make a peanut butter sandwich. We've lived on peanut butter sandwiches often at Holden Village, and they can survive at home on them too. Okay, so I think there's a couple of messages that we need to say to ourselves that may help us as we deal with our feelings and emotions. One is that I believe in you. We may say this to ourselves or to the other person. I trust you. I know you can handle life situations. You are listened to. You are cared for. You are very important to me. And to help ourselves and our others to say to themselves that I like myself. I can think for myself. And there's no problem so great it can't be solved. How do we think positively? To recognize that as children of God, we've got some good background there. God is a loving, forgiving God. How can we act that out in our lives and figure out a problem, a solution to the problem? And that, this may not be scriptural, but I think it's a good thing to end on. Don't ever give up. Final words. It's a struggle. It's a struggle sometimes. Comments, questions. I have just a couple minutes before we go to Vespers.
I have one question, and that is, I'm taking care of my mother, who's 87. Not only that, she's Norwegian.
We won't go any further with that. Okay.
Anyway, she's got a heart problem, etc., etc., and she probably won't have long to live. But at times, we live together for 24 hours, and there are times. Well, she can drive me nuts.
When I feel driven nuts, we still have to recognize that that's a feeling that I have, that I choose to have, and she may be doing a lot of things that trigger that feeling, and part of what goes through is what are my expectations, what are my thoughts, what are my beliefs on this, and then I begin to feel mad, outraged.
But how do you talk to a person that's 87 years old, can have a heart attack any minute? Mm-hmm. You know, how do you?
I think a good number of timeouts. That may seem very flip. I don't mean to be very flip about it. But you may just need to walk out and to be able to say, part of your new belief system might be, she's 87. I don't know what I'm going to be like when I'm 87. I will write down 10 times I will not do such and such, which I don't like right now. But sometimes to be able to say, yeah, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, and give a friendly grunt and turn around and walk out and go splash water on your face, go get a cup of tea, and to look at yourself in the mirror and say, I'm still lovable and capable. Don't like to stand this kind of stuff, but she's 87. I don't think she knows exactly what she's doing or what's behind it all. And it's like, how many of you know about the knights of old, K-N-I-G-H-T-S? What did they always wear when they went off into battle?
Armor.
And what do they carry in their arm?
Shield.
Sometimes we have to make our own armor and our own shield. And the shield that will stop these kinds of trigger remarks that the 87-year-old is making. So they hit the shield and fall off and don't land on me and stick and penetrate me. So create a shield that says, she's okay, she's a child of God, I'm okay, I'm a child of God, I'll love the sinner, I'll still hate what she's saying, but I'm not going to let it wound me. I'm still okay. And you are. You're a lovable, capable person. And go to a mirror and go to yourself. Sometimes we need, our self-esteem is so wrapped up in a lot of our feelings. When I really feel depressed, I get sort of angry and I think, nobody's ever going to come to my funeral when I die. Isn't that silly? I mean, when I'm dead, how am I going to count anyway? It's not going to make any difference. But and to be able to say that and recognize, then I can start laughing because it's a ridiculous kind of thing. And so sometimes we have to find something that renews us and builds us up again. And even if it's going to the mirror and going to yourself to say, hey, you're okay. And you're doing a lot of helpful things for this 87-year-old who can't manage to do them for herself. And I don't like what she's doing. I'll hate the sin, but I'll try to love the sinner. And maybe I can do that better if I take a couple of minutes breather out here.